Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, March 3rd, 2025. I'm Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer. The Hoosiers went 3-2 on the week, getting back to 500 ball, but a few issues reared the heads. Four fielding errors allowed Xavier to pull away from the Hoosiers in Wednesday's home opener. The highlight of the week was Friday when the Hoosiers swept a doubleheader in convincing fashion against Mount St. Mary's and the host Stetson. Hoosier bats were silenced in a Saturday rematch with the Hatters. Sunday's rematch with the Mount got off on the wrong foot, with the Mountaineers taking an early three-run lead before the Hoosiers pulled away for their second run rule victory of the week. A lot of Hoosiers hitters did really well this past week. Chris, who are you giving red belts to?
Yeah, Carl, it was quite a few runs and quite a few hits, and we didn't even have the full, you know, amount of innings we thought we were going to get out of our bats with two run rules. But, you know, for me, I went with Devin Taylor, all right? I mean, you're going to hit 423, have a 5-for-5 game, 12 RBIs, two homers in one game, you know. It was the Devin Taylor that we know and that we've come to know, right? When he's hot, he's hot. And nothing was really stopping him except for maybe Corbin Dickinson. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to get in his head to slow him down. I know how they're having this back and forth with the home runs and the RBI lead and the whole thing. But Devin Taylor absolutely earned the red belt offensively for this week. But, yeah, I mean, there were so many choices you could go through. And it was just about the numbers and really the 5-for-5 game. It's not like you see that all the time. I know Ben had the trivia question, and what was it, Philip Glasser? And the only ones we could remember before that was Grant Richardson's. I mean, that was 19, right? I mean, That was quite a while ago. So five hits is nothing to joke around about. So that really, to me, pushed him over. And I got to say, for the Big Ten, who is this guy on Oregon? I know he hit two grand slams in one game. But I think Corbin Dickinson and Devin Taylor, somehow their votes got split maybe or something, because neither one of them won player of the big for the week for the big. I was shocked. I thought one of them was absolutely going to get that. But I guess if you had two grannies in one game, maybe they're looking more at that. Defensively, to me, this one was one of the easiest ones, I think, in all the years we've ever been doing this. You catch 29 out of 31 innings because of this flu. You'd be put in a position where you absolutely did not think you would be this early in the season. TJ Skyler, I mean, not only did he play the position, he played it well. Mm-hmm. Threw out two guys. You know, how many different pitchers did he have to catch? It's not like we go out there and throw a starter and a couple relievers. You know, it's five, six pitchers a game, four or five at least.
Yeah.
And TJ really held his own. So he's going to get the defensive red belt, the Tony Butler award. And to me, this was just so easy to give it to TJ. I wish I could give him like a bigger award than a red belt, but that's all I got. That's all I can give out. But it was really, really impressive. Obviously, you know, we'll find out what happened with Jake, and Jake was going to play. But I think we're going to last a couple innings until the hit by pitch. But I hope we get some good news about that tomorrow, maybe from some of the media or whatever the case. For the pitching red belt, I had two choices I was going to go with, but I'm going to go with Drew Burr. He's going to get the Joey Donato Award. He got two saves, right? It's like any time Bennis comes in, then Burr's going to come in. Right, so he replaces Bennis the first time. All right, yeah, he gave up a couple hits, but got the save, finished out the game. Then he comes in after Bennis again, three innings, no runs, no hits, and he's really been solid. Leads the team in ERA. So Drew Burr is going to get the Joey Donato Pitching Award for the week. So that's TJ Skyler, Devin Taylor, and Drew Burr wrapping up the red belts. And now, from Carl, he showed me this earlier, right before we started the pod. You can look on the website and see how many red belts people have won, and they were keeping track of it on there, which is cool. We haven't done that before. It used to just kind of be the Cass chart that she would keep for us. But, yeah, you can check it under their name, player tracker and stuff, which is pretty cool. Got a couple of alumni updates before we move on. Matt Gorski hit his third home run of the spring. He's hitting 400, and all his hits are extra base hits. Can Pittsburgh please let him start the team? I mean, it's not like he's trying to make the 27 Yankees. It's Pittsburgh. I think they could use Matt Gorski on their team. So let's just hope they smarten up this year and Matt's on that opening day roster. A couple guys who we hadn't mentioned that hadn't played yet in spring training, Tanner Gordon. He threw an inning and two thirds and had two strikeouts, no runs. Kay Bunnell, he went 2 for 3 with 4 RBIs, so he's gotten on the field in spring training. Timmy Herron threw had one perfect inning with two strikeouts. And I mean, I would think he's a lock to make the team. That bullpen the Indians have, man, they are locked down, and he's a big part of it. So I wouldn't think there's too much worry about Herron making the team. A highlight for today, probably the biggest one, honestly, of our alumni was Tommy Sommer pitching for Germany. He started the game. He went the first three innings, perfect. Three up, three down every time, three strikeouts. They took him out. Brazil scored 4 runs. So I think, from what I understand, I'm reading a little bit into it, this is like a funky tournament. There's a lot of weird rules. And once you pitch a certain amount of innings, then you can't pitch again for a couple of days. And it's not even so much even head-to-head. It's how many runs did you beat someone by. So there's a lot of weird rules with this tournament. But from what it looks like, he's going to pitch again on Thursday against Bo Takahashi. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bo Takahashi, but he was in the minor leagues for the Diamondbacks, for the Reds. He's actually, unfortunately, and I would hate this, I mean, God forbid it happened to any of our alumni, but he's actually a phantom major leaguer. You know, he made the pros, never got in a game, and never made it back. So he was actually on the Diamondbacks roster for 3 days. Never got in a game and never got called back up. So he's what they call a phantom major leaguer. But he's pitched a lot in Japanese leagues. But, you know, he's Brazilian via, I guess, Japanese heritage. And it looks like it's going to be Bo Takahashi versus Tommy Sommer on Thursday in an elimination game. So we'll see if Tommy can throw another three perfect, or maybe they can extend him a little bit more to get a victory. Now, obviously, we have some games to pay attention to that aren't, you know, happening. I don't even know where they're playing these Germany-Brazil games. But our important games now are coming from Penn State, you know, for the first big weekend that we have. And Cass is going to preview that for us.
Thank you, Chris. So, yep, we're getting – it feels early, but we're getting into Big Ten play already. Set to take on Penn State in Happy Valley. Currently scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, and 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. Do remember that Sunday is spring forward, so don't forget to change your clocks before we get to game time. Or I guess more in this day and age, make sure your cell phone updated to the correct time. Not many physically changing clocks anymore. But yes, as we've mentioned before, with the Big Ten expansion and moving to a 30-game season, we are starting Big Ten play earlier than normal. And unfortunately, from a logistical perspective, the Hoosiers did not get an ideal draw for opening weekend with a natural field in early March in Pennsylvania. That's not great. I mean, I'm assuming none of these northern natural fields are going to be in the best condition ever in early March. So far, it's looking like the weekend will be dry, cloudy, and not the warmest ever, but dry. But as of now, it seems almost definite that it will be very wet on Wednesday, and I don't know how well that field is going to dry out by Friday. So that's something to keep an eye on. Hopefully it won't lead to too many errors. Really hoping it doesn't lead to injury. Like I said, not supposed to be all that warm either, with highs in the mid pushing upper 40s for the weekend. It's too bad the Big Ten couldn't take advantage of adding two Southern California schools by making sure they were both hosting week one instead of shipping UCLA off to Maryland. That seems like a logistical error on their part. And also the team that USC is hosting is Oregon, who could arguably probably be hosting in their own right and be at least as well positioned as any of the Northern Midwest teams outside of Minnesota who gets to play in the nice dome. But on to the games itself. Penn State is currently sitting at 8-1 on the year. They beat Mizzou and UConn and lost to Stetson in Puerto Rico in week one. That is the lone common opponent thus far is Stetson. They swept Longwood in week two, and they swept Richmond, VCU, and William and Mary in week three. They do play the FDU Knights on Tuesday. So technically their record will be different by the time the Hoosiers face them. Since it's still early in the season, last year Penn State was 29-24 on the year, 12-12 in the Big Ten, and IU won the series 2-1 at the BART. On the pitching side, the pitching has largely been solid for Penn State with a staff ERA of just over four and a 1.40 whip. Not a ton of walks. They also don't tend to strike out a ton. Kind of right about average on strikeouts. And it does seem to be fairly committee-based pitching outside of the Friday and Saturday starters. Probable Friday starter is Mason Horwat, who's a right-handed sophomore. He has a 2.25 ERA in 16 innings of work, and a 1.13 whip. He did not give up any runs in his first two outings of the year in a combined 12 innings of work. So all of those runs came in this last week's game. And then the probable Saturday starter, although he has also he's bounced around a little bit in the weekend, is Ryan DeSanto, who's a junior lefty. That's what makes me think he'll probably definitely be the Saturday guy because he's a solid lefty. He has a 2.84 ERA so far in 12 and two thirds, and just a 0.90 whip. So that's something to watch. His first outing, he had a four inning no hitter before they changed it up. So those are the big names to watch on their pitching staff. That'll be interesting to see how the Hoosier bats respond to those two. Their offense has also overall been strong. Batting 313 as a team with a 1.006 OPS. Their OPS is over 1,000 as a team. They have 20 home runs so far. They don't walk a ton, but they also don't strike out a ton. Pretty balanced. They do have five guys who are hitting over 300 individually. And interestingly enough, the three guys to really watch for are all transfers this year. You've got Cole Marcato, who's a Boston College transfer. He's a sophomore outfielder. He's hitting 451 so far in the season. Doesn't have a ton of pop, but he's only struck out once so far on the season, and he has started seven out of the nine games. He's just a guy who gets on base. Another one to watch is Cole Wagner, who's a Georgia transfer grad student, who kind of switches off between first base and outfield. He's hitting 382, has just four Ks on the year, and has a bit of pop, but not a ton of pop. Don't be surprised if on the weekend he's able to knock one out, but I would be surprised to see multiple. And the last of these transfer hitters is Paxton Kling, who's an LSU transfer, junior center fielder, hitting 351 with six home runs. And he was last week's Big Ten Player of the Week. So their bats do have a good mix of consistency and pop. But those are the big three to really watch for this weekend. Those are the ones who could do some damage. But more immediately relevant, the Norse of Northern Kentucky are invading the BART tomorrow. Carl, what should we expect?
Yes, well, first thing is to expect that it's a little earlier because they just announced the game has been moved to 3 p.m. So that will be a 3 p.m. start at the BART Tuesday. So for those of you may be even listening to this after that. So, but for those of you, I am going to get this out tonight, so it will be available at least for the Tuesday morning commute. So if you need to prepare, I will sum up my preview like this. Buckle up and bet the over. Like Indiana, Northern Kentucky is playing 500 ball at the moment. They're 5-5 on the season. Unlike Indiana, the Norse won their first midweek game last week. They defeated Dayton in a 16-14 slugfest that featured 7 combined home runs. In that game, graduate student lefty Bobby Bartlett opened for the Norse. He allowed 3 earned runs and 2.2 innings of work. He did throw 48 pitches in 1.1 innings of work on Friday, but he will be on 3 days rest. They haven't announced a starter, but I think he's going to be an option. I think they want a lefty against IU's very heavy left-handed lineup. As a pitching staff, they have combined for an ERA of 8.82. They've walked 62 batters. They have struck out 82 in 85.2 innings. So lots of walks, lots of strikeouts. They have allowed 20 home runs, which is 2 per game. There's really no excuse that Indiana's offense shouldn't be putting up double-digit runs tomorrow. And that might be necessary because the Norse, like Penn State, have a very good OPS as a team, 0.904. They are averaging just shy of 4 extra base hits per game. The Norse have 3 regulars whose OPS is north of 1,000. Logan Davenport is hitting .455. Gabe Miranda leads the team with 5 home runs. Tyler Schoenfeldt has the team's only 2 triples. He's also stolen 4 bags. 8 Norse players have stolen bases so far this season. So pretty much the entire team is capable of swiping bags. So this will be a real test for the Hoosier pitching staff, who's going to be on their 6th game in 7 days.
And I looked ahead, Carl. Unfortunately, you cannot get a line on this game until tomorrow. But the highest over-under on tonight's card is 13 and a half. So I'm thinking this one's got to be north of 20, right? I mean, holy cow. Yeah, the Hawaii Rainbow against the Northeastern Huskies tonight at 11:35 is the highest over-under, 13 and a half. So you're saying go high, go over. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some runs scored tomorrow
I like it. We'll have to see about it. I wish we could get the. We just you can't. You got to wait till tomorrow when the daily line comes out.
All right. Well, with the return of Big Ten play so soon in the season, it is time for Big Ten Pick'em. And if you have not followed us before, Big Ten Pick'em is a contest we do among the group here at IUBase.com. The 5 of us, so the 3 of us plus Josh Bennett and Zach Horwitz participate. Josh Bennett was the champion last season. Essentially, we take every Big Ten series that does not feature Indiana, and we pick the winner of the series. Basically, you get a point for each series that you win, and we basically just tally them up. We tally them up throughout the season. There'll be a lot more games. This is 30-game season, so 10 series for each team instead of 8. And there are more teams this year. There are 4 more teams. So this week has as many teams as the highest, which is a single season, a single pick from last season. So there are 6 teams, and this is the smaller. There'll be as many as I think 7, maybe 8 series that will be going forward. So we have lots to pick. But this week is a little lighter. It's just 6. Iowa is traveling to Rutgers. UCLA is at Maryland, as Cass mentioned earlier. Washington is traveling to Nebraska. Michigan and Illinois are both traveling to Vero Beach to play each other.
So that's how you do it. You don't go to Pennsylvania to play a Big Ten team. You go to the beach.
Yes.
Who does the scheduling?
But yeah, no, I mean, Illinois was assigned the home assignment, and they elected to play their home series in Vero Beach, yeah. Florida.
I'll elect to go to the beach, too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And Illinois at least has turf, so... Yeah,
it's a nice stadium. They hosted a Super. No, nothing about Illinois. I'm just saying, if you have an option to go to Vero Beach or whatever the hell Illinois, what are you going to pick?
Number 11, Oregon, is traveling to USC. And Purdue is traveling to Minnesota, which will be at US Bank Stadium indoors in Minneapolis.
At least they miracle got that right. Imagine if Minnesota was opening somewhere else instead of taking advantage of the dome. Oh, unbelievable.
All right. So I know we at least have Josh and I's picks. Do you guys have your picks ready?
I'm up. Yep. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to go first, or yep. I don't know how you
yeah,
do it.
Okay. Chris, you go first.
All right. So let's see here. Now, for the first one, I know everybody, and this is a hard one for me to even pick, but I'm going with, you know how everybody zigs, you zag? And this is a hard one to zag because I don't want to take Purdue. But I feel like everybody's going to be on Minnesota as good as they've been playing. And it's at home in the dome. I'm going to take Purdue. I know it just seems I'm going early. I need to make these picks because I'm always in such a hole. And then I have to dig out of it every damn season. So I'm going to try that. I'm going to go with Purdue. Michigan and Illinois. I'm going to go with Skip just because, I want to. If I have, it's a weekend I could root for him. I'll do it. And they got rid of Fegley. So it was harder when Fegley was in that dugout. Let's see. We got Oregon, USC. I mean, to me, Oregon seems to be the class of this this conference. I'm not going to bet against them until they tell me not to. Let's see. We got Washington. Who are they up against?
Nebraska.
Nebraska. I have Washington. That's another zag. I feel like a lot of people want to take Nebraska. So I'm going to take Washington. That's on the road, right? That's at Nebraska?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was another zag pick for me. And then an easy one just because I never want to pick Maryland anyway. I took UCLA. I think that would be a good one. A nice win. Watch Maryland lose their first series. And then what is this? Rutgers, Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wasn't really too sure about it. I just went with Rutgers for Peter Cerruto. Yeah, so those are my picks.
Cass, what do you got?
Okay, well, not too horribly far off, Feenies, but
really?
I am also going with Rutgers.
Good. Yeah,
less so for Cerruto, more so for the fact that they're the home team. That one I'd put at pretty close to a 50-50 toss-up, and in those I'll often err on the side of the home team unless I have a reason otherwise. That's also kind of what I'm doing for UCLA Maryland. I'm going with Maryland mainly because that's UCLA traveling across the country, and like we're going coast to coast on this one, so
it's true, yeah.
So that was my concern there. I had UCLA highlighted until about 15 minutes ago. That's how toss up this one was.
Plus, they have better hats. Those, I like that hat they have.
Yes.
That's like the Brooklyn Dodgers has the B, the Bruins. Oh, we've got some really good uniforms now.
Oh, yeah.
You've noticed that we've picked up USC. Oregon's always got some wild stuff from Nike. And then UCLA, I mean, UCLA has got
classic.
Some really sweet uniforms.
Yes.
I like that B, that Brooklyn Dodger B. I like that.
Going to go with Nebraska. What would that be? I'm zigging instead of zagging on that
I
one.
Believe that would be a major zig, guys.
Yeah, with again, with the home field. I'm leaning into home field week one. But I am going to go Michigan on the Florida series because... Mm-hmm. Again, that's not really home field advantage. They're both traveling, and I'd say it's about 50-50. I'm going Michigan. Like Feeney said, I'm sticking with Oregon until they give me a reason not to.
I mean, they're the
It's
best
hard to
right
pick
now.
against them. And then I am going to pick Minnesota as home field advantage. And I don't trust Purdue. I don't really trust either of them, but Minnesota's played some legit competition
And
this
has some
season.
nice wins,
Has
some really nice
some
wins.
wins and some very close, tight losses.
That's why I figured everybody else was going to take Minnesota.
Yeah.
So that's what I took for them.
Yep. So I think that was all of them.
Okay. Josh has got his picks to me. He's going with Nebraska, Illinois, Iowa, UCLA, Oregon, and Purdue.
Oh, well, there you go. I thought I'd be the only one.
All right. I am going with Iowa at over Rutgers. I'm picking Maryland to win against UCLA. I'm picking Nebraska at home against Washington. I'm taking Illinois down in Florida.
Okay.
I think Illinois is a sneaky good club. And this is where I'm going to call an
Ooh.
upset. I think USC is going to beat Oregon. I
Okay.
think USC is massively underrated, and I think they are poised for a good series there.
Okay.
And we know Purdue is going to win because I am picking Minnesota, and because I pick every Purdue series wrong. It doesn't matter which way I pick it, it's going to go the other. So,
Yes. And it's not a small sample. This has been for like 3 years.
yes, it has. And
Crazy.
this is what really hurts is Purdue's old coach is the coach of Oregon. So I'm afraid that that is
Yeah.
now that with
It's
Wazakowski at
gonna
Oregon,
continue.
it's just gonna completely burn my pick'ems. I do not have Zach's picks yet because he is still traveling from having watched the Florida Miami series this past weekend in person. So
I saw they won at least one game in Miami for him. Did they take the series or?
they lost the series, but they did take the Sunday game.
Knew they won at least one. I remember seeing that. Good for him. You don't want to go out. You don't want to go out there for the sweep. You don't. At least get one. I'm going to New York for the opening Mets home series against the Blue Jays. So I just give me one. No, I want all. No, of course I want them all. I haven't been out there in the opening day in a while. I had
Yeah.
gone from 1998 all the way up till 2019, believe it or not. And then with
Yep.
COVID and then things just
COVID.
got funky and then you just change up stuff you used to normally always do, right? But we're bringing it back this year. So it should be fun.
Nice.
So that's it for the picks. The three of us are now just, as always, that we've been doing, just going to have a round table, a little, chat, chop it up a little bit. It was a mixed week. You score 50 runs, you're happy. But, the performance at home against Xavier, of course, with the errors again, and anybody who saw coach in the post game, he was not pleased. I mean, some of these were just, routine plays that weren't made. And then we had a chance to come back on the road trip and see, play better defense, do better with guys on base. And it's been a mixed bag. Like, I know there's other non-conference games that we're going to play midweek and stuff, but basically the non-con's over for the weekends, right? I think we get one Bellarmine maybe or something, but basically Big Ten
Abilene
starts
Christian.
now. What
Yeah.
is it? Not Bellarmine.
It's at Abilene Christian. That's
Abilene Christian.
that's a real series. So
So that's
that's
a
the
good series.
yeah.
Okay. But basically big season starts now, right? A lot of times, like, all right, as long as we're good by the big season. Well, now that it's so many teams and it's so many more series, like we're here now. And I think it is, you put it in the thing, I think it is a really a mixed bag. There's been good, there's been bad, there's been expectations that we have not come close to, and there's been some positive surprises. So it's like, which sides do you want to look at? I mean, I think as a real fan, you just got to look at all of them. You can't ignore what you don't want to see. What do they call that spin, right? Political spin. You can spin it anyway. You can make anything look good. But I don't think we've done that. And I don't think that would be true and be fair to the guys, right? I mean, listen, here's what's worked. Here's what hasn't. For me, the defense has been a surprise. I really got to say, especially the infield defense. I don't know. Maybe we've been spoiled for years. Like, you know,
We have been, but
that's what it is,
it's
right?
still it's still nowhere near where I would expect it to be, given the level of veteran play.
Right. That's the infield was the veteran, right? The infield was, here's what we have. We know what we have.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's where most of the routine plays aren't getting made.
Right. Right. And I am always more forgiving in the early season because they don't get out a whole ton. And it's a whole, even between Mellencamp turf and turf at the BART and any other turf field, those are two completely different types of turf that play completely differently. And then you get early season, you're playing a lot on grass and dirt. So I'm always more forgiving early in the season. But seeing it from these veterans who have always been pretty sure-handed, that's what's got me scratching my head. And even beyond the actual errors to the mental errors, the ones that don't count in the box score.
You throw in the base running mistakes on top of that.
Yes. And I know I gave props last for the gutsy steal of third that ended up being hugely critical, but some of these base running mistakes have been, for lack of a better term, comically bad. And it sometimes it's hard to tell when we can't see the games, but just the number of guys that are getting out on the base paths for no real reason, that's been difficult to watch as well.
Yeah, and it's you know, a lot of guys left on base that first weekend. I feel like we've gotten better with that lately. I think that's something that just took more, I don't know, muscle memory, more just getting the run, getting the reps in, because I don't feel like we've put anywhere near the left on base numbers we did in that first weekend. But still, there's been errors and call set of base running mistakes. You know, it's just about it's. I just I, it's big time. You know, this is when it counts the most. You know, when you're playing to win a conference, and on a season where it's been a little shaky early, now we're starting big play early. Yeah. So it's, but they got, and then to have to start in the cold in a dirt field in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? They'd both be playing on the same field. There's been some shootouts in that place too.
Yes,
some
sir.
Wild, wild softball games in
yes.
that field, especially come Sunday. So, and then Carl said, you know, bet that over. We might be betting that over all weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I'll tell you what my concern is. My real concern, especially after listening to Cass's preview of Penn State, is how are these hitters going to do against those first two starting pitchers?
Yep.
This team has not hit good pitching well.
No.
They have absolutely taken bad pitching to the woodshed.
Yes.
But over and over again, Oregon State.
Well, the Stetson guy on Saturday was
Gonzalez. The Stetson guy on Saturday. It's just – when these pitchers do, they absolutely shut this team down. And and it's not just, you know, oh, they didn't get, you know, in those cases it was not, you know, not they weren't getting base runners.
Right.
So I like what the offense is doing. I like where they have come, but it's not enough to just beat the bad pitching. They're gonna have to. And we've seen this team do it. We've seen Indiana teams do really well against good pitching. I mean,
yeah,
and we're not, I'm not talking
pitching.
About putting up 15 runs. You don't need to do that. You shouldn't have to on a Friday and a Saturday.
No, but at least 5-6 runs.
Yeah,
is definitely a reasonable general expectation.
And especially this weekend, if we're going to have a lot of contact, a lot of errors, and a lot of Seabold and Gilly aren't the guys. I mean, even Gilly had that big strikeout performance. It's not really his MO, and neither is Seabold. They're going to put the bat on a ball. We got to perform in the field. I think it might take 6-7 runs, and that's okay.
Yeah.
He's got to make sure it happens.
I will say, if Grable can consistently do what he did this weekend, we've got three legit starters, and I am suddenly even less concerned about the weekend pitching.
Yeah. Like, you might become that Sunday name instead of the TBA or TBD, right?
Right. Even if it is officially listed as TBD, that's still...
I don't think it will be.
You don't think it'll be?
I think Grable's pitching Friday.
Oh, Friday.
Yes, I think Grable's taking over on Friday. Okay. He's got stuff.
He does.
And I absolutely love what Seabold and Gilly have. But they are, it's the quantity of their mix that makes them successful. Mm-hmm. Which is also why they struggled a bit this past week, because each of them struggled with a pitch. So you take a pitch away and they're suddenly not as effective.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to continue. But for one thing, I think they are going to want – the other thing is neither one of them did well with a less of a day of rest. Yeah. I think they may want to extend them out a little bit. And Grable has got stuff. And it may be, you know what? If you're going to win on a Friday, you're going to have that kind of thing. And then what you have then is Drew Burr that can – you can use him as you need. You can either determine that
–
You can determine that, okay, Grable doesn't have it and he gets lit up on Friday. Then you throw some inning eaters to just get past it, and then you go after the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Or Grable does have it and you back him up with Drew Burr and you shut it down and you go into Saturday with a win and you still have two starters to go.
Yeah.
Entirely conjecture on my part. But given the fact that Seabold and Grable both went Friday. The point is, I think they are Friday and Saturday. I think Gilly moves to Sunday. And boy, what an advantage that is. You win one of Friday and Saturday. I like Indiana's odds with Gilly as a Sunday starter.
and that's what I was saying in previous weeks of as many question marks as came in to start the season. In your average normal weekend kind of play, when you're not playing 6 games in 7 days and these multiple 4-game weekends, and once you get to a normal midweek 3 games, once you get to that, I have full confidence in this weekend pitching staff. Midweeks might get occasionally funky depending on how weekends do, but that's always the case. Midweeks are always a little nuts.
I'm encouraged with the decision to have Bramel starting. I would really like to see a freshman take that role and excel in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the thing. Once again, they're going to be starting over. All three of these guys aren't going to be here next year. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to start over with the starting pitching again. And I think you're looking at a future Friday starter in Bramel. Yep. And it would be nice to see that, see that grow from a freshman. Now, granted, they were. Yeah. Yep. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Well, Brady Thomas still haven't really been able to show what he can do.
Yeah.
I know that they're big on him, and as we all were, we really haven't been able to see much of him. So that could be another bullet in the gun for later. And then as far as the offense surprises, I mean, obviously Corbin Dickerson, we didn't know that was coming.
No.
And we certainly didn't know Jake Hanley. We knew he was good, but you don't know that a freshman's going to hit every day.
Well, and speaking of Hanley, so I want to throw this in there because I got curious about the last time we saw something like what Hanley did to start the season as a freshman, even just starting the first 10 games, let alone getting a hit in each of the first 10 games.
Right.
Or even just a freshman having a double-digit hit streak in their freshman season. So I've got a few kind of our own trivia questions.
Bogorski has to be in there.
Well, so who do you think was the last freshman to even start the first 10 games of
Josh
the season?
Pine. Josh Pine, yeah.
That is correct. He started the
Yeah.
first 40 games of the season before
Yeah,
he got
that's only
there.
that because I didn't know that, so.
Who do you think the last freshman? I will say it is a year where multiple freshmen had a double digit hit streak, not counting games not played. So, like, if they sat a game, that doesn't disrupt the streak. Just in games they played, they had a double digit hit streak.
Double digit, and who were
Yeah, who do you
What
think they were?
or what season? Well, obviously,
Who
yeah,
do you think they were?
I
I mean,
would
it's.
say it's 2012, and we're talking about Schwarber and Travis.
No.
What
Okay.
about Brock and Carter?
It's more recent than that.
Joey B and Jolly.
And Jolly. Yep.
Okay.
Last year, Joey had 11 game hit streak and Jolly had a 13 game hit streak.
Of course, he had to be on this list for something.
So
He took Angie's job and went off.
going back to 2011, only eight freshmen have had a double-digit hit streak within their freshman year. Six of them were in the last 3 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, you've got Joey and Jolly last year, Devin and Cerny the year before, Carter and Pine. Brock got close. He got eight. He did not get double digits.
Where's Brock? I would have thought Brock.
Nope, Brock did not quite get there. And then there was a huge, comparatively huge gap to Gorski with 11. But given that, who do you think had the longest freshman hit streak, at least going back to 2011?
I would say Gorski.
Nope. That's where we're getting back there to.
2011, I would say Dustin Demuth.
Not nope, it was Sam Travis. You're in the right kind of
Was
time
those guys.
frame.
Okay.
17 games.
Okay.
2011 is the last. So in the roster where you go into their individual stats and it's got the game log, that makes it nice and easy. The last year they have that available is 2011. So
Okay.
I went through
So you were
and
trying to trick me. Got it.
Well, so I went through and manually counted for a few bright spots before that with Micah Johnson, Alex Dickerson, and Josh Fegley. Fegley, it gets a little trickier with a catcher, just because they're not typically as freshmen, they're not catching every day. Even Fineman, as a freshman catcher, was not catching every day. But Micah Johnson started all we it was much more common for the freshmen to start all the games back then. Schwarber started all 60 games, Travis started 59 of 60, DeMuth started all 55, Micah Johnson started all 55. He had a 16 game hit streak. Dickerson started 58 of 59, including the first 53. And his is what I would argue is the closest to what Hanley's done. And that's putting Hanley in phenomenal company. At least definitely going back to 2011, probably going back to 2007. I could find no instance of a freshman even starting the season with a 10-game hit streak, let alone starting every game and having a 10-game hit streak. The closest I found was Alex Dickerson, who did not get a hit in the first game and then did get a hit in the next 15. That
Oof.
was his long streak. And so I just wanted to highlight how big of a feat what Jacob Hanley's been doing. It's just been phenomenal. And he hasn't gotten a ton of attention surrounding it. Like, IU fans have noticed, but the fact that he hasn't had freshman of the week at all, because he's kind of just chugging along under the radar, getting his hits, not doing anything super flashy. And so I
He's
did want to
getting to his
highlight.
stats not through one phenomenal game or one series. Yeah. So
Yeah. Well, it's like a running back. He hits the line, hits the line, hits the line. He's going to break one. And one of these weekends, maybe Hanley breaks out and gets that player of the week. That's a great point because he has been solid and he's not really getting any press at all.
So I did want to take the time to highlight just how, with some of the big bats that we've seen here, Fegley, Dickerson, Johnson, Travis, Schwarber, DeMuth, Gorski. Now, I did only count Hoosiers who had a freshman year as a Hoosier. So that eliminates some of the big bats, like Matt Lloyd is not counted
I'm
in
pretty
there.
sure Grant had a pretty long hitting streak or
His.
on base streak, but he didn't start the season as a freshman, so that wouldn't count as this. But he had a very good, Grant Richardson had a very good freshman year.
He did, but even then, he only had a 7-game hit streak as his longest.
That was his longest? Okay. Then he
So
didn't play the
I say
first three.
only
Yeah,
as a
but hey.
freshman, 7 games is
Yeah.
not something
Good
to,
series. Yeah.
yeah. So I really did want to highlight
Well, that
how
season was
well
only
he's done.
15 games long.
No, he wasn't. That was his sophomore year.
I thought it was his freshman year. Okay. Oh, the freshman year was 19. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That was a really good hitting team. So that was hard to break out with.
I
Yeah.
felt bad
He
for him.
didn't start in the beginning of his freshman year, but a couple of weeks later, I think somebody got hurt and then that got him in and
Something.
never came out.
I did feel bad for Hunter Jesse because he was Jesse and Vikramba were the ones the in the freshman list who were particularly impacted by COVID. Jesse had an 8-game hit streak, which given how short that season was,
Half the season, come
that's saying something. So his his
we had a rough non-con that year. He faced some
oh
great
yeah
pitching.
yep so again, just to put some context into what Hanley's done so far this year, if the big boy media is not going to talk about it too much, the conference isn't going to hype it up too much, I figure we can do that, even if it
Definitely.
means me counting through every single game for like 3 seasons of old data. That was something. Oh.
All right. Well, I think we've touched upon the important topics for this week. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for listening and paying attention this week. Again, this is Big Ten week coming up. It's kind of crazy to think about it this soon in the year, but it's also exciting. It's a demonstration that the Big Ten is a serious baseball conference now. It always felt like that was, you'd sit there and watch the national media, and they're all talking about, the ACC going this coming week, and the SEC goes the next week. And then it's like, oh yeah, the Big Ten's finally going to start playing baseball, and now the Big Ten is right there with the ACC in the fourth week of the season, playing conference games, and that's pretty cool. So thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.